All right, we're in Psalm 64, and Marcella's class can go out if you guys want to walk out. Always fearful of taking one of those fisherman's friends things and chewing it up before I get in the pulpit, because it sometimes goes up my nose and I stand up here with my eyes watering and can't talk. So anyway, we're in Psalm 64. Psalm 64. We got down through most of verse 6 last time, but let me go back to the top for context's sake, and not too much to read there anyway. But verse 1, "Hear my voice, O God, and my prayer preserve my life from fear of the enemy. Hide me from the secret counsel of the wicked, from the insurrection of the workers of iniquity, who whet their tongue like a sword and bend their bows to shoot their arrows, even bitter words, that they may shoot in secret at the perfect. Suddenly do they shoot at him and fear not. They encourage themselves in an evil matter." Talked about that quite a bit last time. "They commune, laying snares privily. They say, who shall see them? They search out iniquities." That's where we start tonight. We may have touched some of this before, but they search out iniquities. I mean, they get a microscope out and a dissecting tool, and they do the best they can to find the smut. You see that politically all the time. God help you if you ever decide to run for office, you know, because somebody's going to dig up all kinds of stuff. And with the way things are today, with everybody having done Facebook stuff and all that, a lot of it's just hung out to dry for everybody to see. And a lot of times, young people don't think about that. But verse 6, "They search out iniquities, they accomplish a diligent search. Both the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep." We closed last time having talked for a while about the inward thought, and there's one related thing left. We won't spend a lot of time with it, but the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep. Now, I don't have the word deep for you, but what that means is that men can be very inventive. Now, God is deep. God's thoughts are deep. But the Lord put in man, and it's still in fallen man, the capability of thinking deep thoughts. He's not always right about the conclusions that he comes to, but he's managed to build electron microscopes and Hubble telescopes and, you know, shoot off stuff into space and, you know, MRI machines and all that. It's remarkable. It's amazing what can happen precept upon precept in science and what men have accomplished. Problem is, man is, while he's done some good, he's also done an awful lot of evil. Look, if you will, in Psalm 106, if you don't mind, let's run a couple things down. There's a word that relates to some of this, and that word is invention. And we always think about inventors, and we think of inventions being good and fine, and usually, and sometimes they are, but Psalm 106, you'll find when you compare words that the Lord holds a lot of what man has invented in a very negative light. Psalm 106, go on down to verse 29, where, and again, this is in connection with, they join themselves also in verse 28 unto Baal Peor. That's Balaam advising Balak and all that. That was during Numbers 22 through 24 or whatever. But, "And they ate the sacrifices of the dead." Next thing he brings up is, "Thus they provoked him with anger with their inventions." Now that invention may very well have to do with just inventive ways, excuse making to sin in common things. This may not be talking about some scientific invention here, I grant you that, but it says that thus they provoked him to anger with their inventions, and the plague break in upon them. But it does warn you that when man starts bragging and lifting up and glorifying his own inventions, you're looking at trouble. I mean, We all know very well. In fact, we would all be, most of us would be up a creek kind of without some of it. You know, technology is a wonderful thing, and a lot of it served man well. But it's also true that a lot of people are in a lot of trouble today, addicted, broken, in bondage to sin because of it. It's just true. The word invention is used again in verse 39. Thus were they defiled with their own works and went a-whoring with their own inventions. Now that, you may again be kind of inclined to connect that, you know, with adultery and stuff. And I know that's probably true, but surely you can see that when a man gets too far ahead of himself and what he does and what he invents, what he brings to pass, and it doesn't take a very wise man to see what Hollywood hath wrought in our society. What, for all it's good, I am on the internet every day. I look up stuff. I study, all that kind of stuff. But there's an awful lot of people that are, I mean, bound and gagged by it. You have to admit it. You have to just say that as nice as it is to have a cell phone, some people should have theirs thrown away. It says there, thus were they defiled with their own works and went a-whoring with their own inventions. That occurs at a lot greater level than just, you know, just for lack of a better word, I guess, carnality. Their own inventions. Now, go back, if you will, to Psalm 99. Let me just touch a couple more of these things to convince you that the Lord, you know, it may be that we can justify a lot of what we have, but you have to admit that a lot of what we have got us a lot in trouble, too. Psalms 99. Go on down, if you will, to verse 8. Psalm 99 and verse 8. Thou answeredst them, O Lord our God, thou wast a God that forgavest them, though thou tookest vengeance of their inventions. Again, I know that a lot of that had to do with idolatry, with gods, and we always think of the poor, backwards Israelites, you know, just following around, you know, totem poles and going after the graven gods of the heathen and all those sort of things. But you can certainly apply that to more than just a totem pole, right? I mean, the Lord took vengeance of their inventions. Think about what man has invented in these. I mean, think about my father. Think about my grandfather when he was born, which would have been in the, I don't know, the late 1800s or early teens or 20s or something like that of the 1900s. And the things that a generation of people have wrought since that time, you can't say that we're better off for it. In a lot of ways we are. I'm sure it sure is nice to have an MRI machine that you can get in and have somebody show you what's wrong. That's nice. It's the surgery, the medical profession has certainly proven itself to have capacity, folks, to do some remarkable things. You think about the fact that they take out a hip and replace it, take out a knee and replace it, and the guy is up on his feet the same day. What a remarkable thing. And yet at the same time, we have the same nonsense that we've been putting up with for two years now going on at the same time. With the positive side comes so much baggage, it's not even funny. Again, it sure is cool. My father wouldn't have known what to do with a cell phone. He probably would have left it at home because he didn't want to talk on the phone anyway. But our mothers and fathers, if we're of any age at all, you know, beyond, you know, the millennial age, wouldn't have known what to do with a cell phone. Well, now people can't live without them. And that's just it. They're in bondage to it. They're addicted to it. Folks don't even know how to write. They don't even know how to talk anymore. You know, we find all the time, if I'll be reading something online, some source, electronic source, and people, journalists, electronic journalists, are terrible writers. Now, I'm not just being picky with it. I'm saying they don't know how to spell. They don't know how to put words together. They're always doing this TTYL and LOL and like that, like we're texting. And no, write it out, man. But the inventions. Let me show you something else. Let me just take you to Romans chapter 1 real quick. Romans 1. Well, on your way there, look at Ecclesiastes, by the way, chapter 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 7. You have to know that part of what man's going to be responsible for are the things that he invented, not just his idols, not just his attempts to worship something different than God, but there's an awful lot of things that man has chained himself to. Look in Ecclesiastes chapter 7, down to verse 29. Now, again, I know that the advice in Ecclesiastes sometimes is a bit tainted because of what Solomon became in Ecclesiastes, by the time of Ecclesiastes, instead of in Proverbs, where he was excellent. But notice that this is true. Lo, this only have I found, that God hath made man upright, but they have sought out many inventions. Now, that's somebody seeking a way to get their way around God. And folks seem to hardly have to work at it anymore. Nobody holds them accountable for the truth. You don't have to tell the truth. You don't have to work hard. And so now men are just broken. If they weren't broke, they had the tendency to be broken before, and they could wind up in the ditch. But now men are born broken. They're raised broken by broken people. And they're ungodly many times without any hope of change in life by any practical standard. And God's going to take vengeance. Now there's one more, Romans chapter 1. Romans 1. Now if you're tired of hearing preachers denigrate man, I'm really sorry. But man is really sorry. He's just as sorry as he can be. And as we move further and further, Dr. Ruckman used to say, back to the Bible or back to the jungle. And I kind of used to go, I don't know. It's probably right because Doc said it, but man, I don't know, you know. But boy, have you not seen that? I mean, have you seen how people act now in public? Have you seen what people do? You see the stuff that people post on Facebook or internet stuff? I mean, I've had people who got mad at me because I found something about them on the internet, or somebody point out something where things they posted on Facebook, so there are these pictures and are these comments, and so they should be accountable for them. So I go to them, and they accuse me of being nosy and not taking care of my own business because I'm dealing with them about something they posted on the World Wide Web. It's crazy. For you to argue with your husband or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or whatever and then run home and post it on Facebook is about the stupidest, most derogatory thing you could ever do. Moron. Stupid. Why would you do that? Anyway, I don't need to keep going there, probably. Romans chapter 1, verse 30. Notice the Lord is coming down hard on man once again, and that's why I said what I said about, if you think I'm hard on man, you just wait till you get before the Lord. But it says in verse 30, they're backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things. Inventors. And that's where we got off on this with the inventions. So we're back to Psalm 64 and verse 6. Both the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep. So man is deep. But folks, man is not as deep as God. Look in Psalms 92. Psalms 92 and verse 5. Man may be pretty inventive, but man's not holy. And man is not as deep as God, and God is holy. Psalm 92 and looking for my note. Psalm 92, verse 5. O Lord, how great are thy works, and thy thoughts are very deep. That's an understatement. Because his thoughts are not like our thoughts, nor his ways our ways. For as the, his thoughts are higher than our thoughts. His ways higher than our ways. He doesn't think like you. He's, you know, if you've ever met somebody super, 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 super smart, and you spend a little time with them and you find them weird and they don't think like you, multiply that exponentially out beyond what you even understand, and then you've got God. And on top of it, he's holy. So he's very deep. You don't get it. We have a hard time getting anything of it. Look in Romans chapter 11 real fast. Romans 11. We have a hard time grasping if the Holy Spirit wasn't indwelling us and interceding and giving understanding, then we still wouldn't know. Because he's the revelator. He reveals it. But in Romans chapter 11, verse 33, this is just an exclamation, really. Verse 33, 11:33, oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments. Think about that. I mean, I'm not as smart as Albert Einstein and don't pretend to be, but I can go read his writings and search out his thoughts. Well, I can also read God's writings and search out his thoughts, but having understood everything that he thought, which I don't, I would still fall short. Because it says in verse 33, how unsearchable are his judgments, his ways past finding out. That's why it's hard to know God. It's because there are things that you just can't find out the way you would normally find stuff out. In fact, he has to reveal it to you. In fact, he's probably going to have to put you through some stuff and have you suffer some things and go through some hard things before you start grasping anything of it. It's just, he's that way. Okay, we're back to Psalm 64. Psalm 64, both, verse 6, both the inward thought of every one of them and the heart is deep, but not as deep as God. But God shall shoot at them with an arrow, suddenly shall they be wounded. He'll shoot at them with an arrow. Maybe that's a literal arrow. I'll show you one of those in a second. I just remember, one time two kings were in battle, and the Lord wanted one of those kings dead, and so there was a bowman that drew and fired an arrow just at a chance, just fired it off in the air, and it found a chink in Ahab's armor and killed him. Okay? And so God can find you wherever he wants you, however he wants you. Look, if the Lord wanted to kill you, he can do it other ways than besides COVID. Seriously. I mean, I know that you wouldn't know that these days, but there are other ways to die than besides COVID, just so you know. Anyway, back to verse 7, but God shall shoot at them with an arrow, suddenly shall they be wounded. Now, he's talking about something prophetic there. Look in Psalm 7. Psalm 7. This is actually a prophecy. David, of course, is many times stands in the place of the king in the millennium. Sometimes he stands in the place of that king waiting in the tribulation for the kingdom to be delivered to him. So in Psalms chapter 7, notice the Lord's arrows in 7:11. God judgeth the righteous, and God is angry with the wicked every day. If he turn not, he will whet his sword. We just read in Psalm 64 about the wicked whetting their swords. He hath bent his bow and made it ready. He hath also prepared for him the instruments of death. He ordaineth his arrows against the persecutors. That's the Lord getting the arrows ready to come back at the second advent. Look at one more passage along this line, if you wouldn't mind. Habakkuk. Find the little book of Habakkuk, chapter 3. The Lord comes back with flaming sword and all those things. That much is true. But he also comes back with arrows. Habakkuk, chapter 3. This whole passage is about the second advent of Christ. Habakkuk 3. The rout, verse 3. God came from Teman, Holy One from Mount Paran, Selah. And he goes on through, and before him, verse 5, went the pestilence and burning coals went forth at his feet. He's spewing fire as he goes, as you well know. To tie it together, verse 11, the sun and moon stood still in their habitation. We know that's true from Revelation and other places. Thou didst march through the land in indignation. Thou didst thresh the heathen in anger. Again, that's the second coming of Christ. Thou woundest, in verse 13, the head out of the house of the wicked. That's the dragon. Now go back to verse 11 and notice, at the light of thine arrows they went, and at the shining of thy glittering spear. The Lord comes back not just with a sword, but with a spear and some arrows too. Back to Psalm 64 and verse 7. But God shall shoot at them with an arrow, suddenly shall they be wounded. And you can make those arrows spiritual if you want to, but there are some real arrows coming. Verse 8, so they shall make their own tongue to fall upon themselves. All that see them shall flee away. He's predicting there. He's telling you that men oftentimes are going to wind up pronouncing their own judgment. I mean, when David said, four sheep for a sheep, it was four sheep for a sheep. When the Jews said, his blood be on us and on all our children, that's still going on, right? I mean, it ought to be a heart-stopping thing to realize all the stupid things that you've said in your life, and the fact that the Lord washed a lot of that stuff away. Just try to not say a whole bunch of stupid stuff still, and let everybody know what you're going to do, and so on and so forth, and start pronouncing judgment, because sometimes the Lord brings judgment back on your head. Man, Hooker said, General Hooker of the Union said at Chancellorsville, he said, I have Bobby Lee in my back pocket now. He said, God himself couldn't deliver Robert E. Lee from my hand. Turned out to be just the opposite. Okay, the sinking of the Titanic, God himself couldn't sink this ship. Didn't take God to sink it. It took just some ice. That's all. But man, there's lots of examples like that in history. McClellan said the same thing at Sharpsburg. He came upon, they found orders written from General Lee's hands, wrapping some cigars left on the ground. And, I mean, it was definitive orders of how Lee was going to split his army and head towards the general area of Sharpsburg. And so McClellan had that key thing in hand. He said, I will defeat Robert E. Lee now. Well, he didn't. It wound up being the bloodiest day, I think, of the Civil War. But at Antietam, which is the same as Sharpsburg, it was a complete standoff with both armies just mowing each other down. But it was the furthest thing from a major defeat. I mean, if you had the orders in hand, you should be able to take care of it. But he didn't. Now, there's just lots of stuff in the scriptures about that as well. I guess I'm just advising you to be careful what you say. Be careful what you say about people, because some of it may come back on your own head. It's just true. Now, there's a few examples for you. I've given you a couple already. Look in John chapter 11, if you wouldn't mind. Look in John 11. Here's one. And men say things sometimes meaning one thing and it being another way. John chapter 11. And, of course, the priests and Pharisees are real upset by this point with Jesus Christ. Verse 47, then gathered the chief priests and Pharisees a council and said, what do we? For this man doeth many miracles. If we let him thus alone, all men will believe on him. And the Romans shall come and take away both our place and the nation. One of them, named Caiaphas, being high priest that same year, said unto them, ye know nothing at all, nor consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, that the whole nation perish not. Well, plainly you can take that two ways. He meant he wanted to kill Jesus Christ to preserve the nation. He didn't realize that what he was saying was that it was expedient that Christ die to save the nation. It wasn't meaning the same thing at all. And so it says in verse 51, and he thus spake, or rather, and thus spake he, not of himself, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus should die for that nation. It says, because of his office as high priest, he was thinking one thing and meaning one thing as he said it, but the Lord turned it so that he was actually prophesying another truth. Now, that's the original manuscript right there. the original thing is God breathing on that guy and having that guy say something that he intended to mean one thing, only God brought it to mean something else. Now, folks, in that respect, I mean, I'm not a Calvinist in the least, but that kind of sovereignty I like. God is sovereign. And sometimes he takes something with double meanings and turns it, and this is one of those remarkable times. Look in your Bible, if you would, at a couple other places here. Look in Proverbs 12 real quick. Proverbs 12. And you have to watch what you say, because a little bird of the air might tell it. And sometimes what somebody says, they wind up facing themselves. Proverbs chapter 12, going down to verse 13. The wicked is snared by the transgression of his lips, but the just shall come out of trouble. He is snared by the transgression of his lips. He's snared by it. Look in chapter 18, Proverbs 18, verse 7. A fool's mouth is his destruction. His lips are the snare of his soul. Think of how many times, I mean, you work in the world, think how many times you hear somebody say GD, right? Look around. That's exactly what's happening. Well, blankety blanket. Yep, that's exactly what's happening. And so men say stuff, you know, just, well, you know, JC, Jesus Christ, right? Say that, calling on the authority of the Almighty, and just let it sit like that. Use it as a cuss word. Well, look around. What do you think the Lord feels about that? Look at one more passage, if you wouldn't mind. I was reading this morning and found this. Luke chapter 19. Luke 19. Luke 19, down in verse 20. Let's go through this a little bit. Okay, the goodman leaves his servants with some pounds to invest. And so, verse 16, then came the first, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. He said unto him, Well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in very little, have their authority over 10 cities. So that sounds like our inheritance in the millennium, where you have a pound. Notice it's not a talent. It's a pound. That's an English measure. Lord gave you certain things to do some things with. Again, that's an English measure. And in verse 18, and the second came saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. He said, likewise to him, be thou over 5 cities. So if this applies to the church age, and it looks like it does, then part of your reward, if we're going to rule and reign with him in the millennium, is going to be with what you did, with what God left you to invest with, right? Now, with that said, think about the judgment seat of Christ in the future, and think about the modern era of Christianity and the number of excuses people have, and the kind of lives that, and I'm not trying to be pompous about it, but the average life that the average quote-unquote Christian leads. Right? I mean, the average Christian has never passed out a tract. The average Christian is the furthest thing from having ever gone into the public arena to try to reach the public with the gospel. Now, you shouldn't feel bad because y'all have done that in parades for years. You've done that this year at the state fair, various things, et cetera, et cetera. So praise the Lord, right? Well, notice what happens here for this last guy. It says in verse 20, and another came saying, Lord, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin. Lord, it sure is good to be saved. Boy, I sure appreciate you saving me. Right? For I feared thee, because thou art an austere man. Thou takest up that thou laidst not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow. And he saith unto him, oh boy, out of thine own mouth will I judge thee. Boy, wouldn't that be something? If at various points in your life, as a fruitless Christian, you pronounced your own judgment at the judgment seat of Christ, because the Lord says, I'm going to use your words. I'm going to use what you said. So he goes on down there in verse 22, out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest that I was an austere man. Now, is God austere? No. He said, I'm going to use your words. You judged me to be austere. So, since I'm so austere, I'm going to taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore, then gavest not thou my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required mine own with usury. He said unto them that stood by, take from him the pound, and give to him that hath 10 pounds. And they said unto him, Lord, he hath 10 pounds. For I say unto you that unto every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not. Now, you have to read that, and you have to think, he hath not fruit. He hath not gained on the pound. Even that he hath shall be taken away from him. So that may be why a whole bunch of folks wind up with nothing at the judgment seat of Christ, where somebody has at least gone to the public with a handful of tracts and tried to reach him. Written some letters to friends, knocked a few doors on visitation, and done the best that they could with what they had. And everybody will admit in the end that they could have done more. But I'm just saying, you know, God judged this guy from his own mouth. He says, no, I was scared of you, Lord. You're a tough employer. He said, you think I'm tough? Yeah, I'm tough. I'm taking it away from you because you didn't gain anything. So he judged him out of his own mouth. So back to Psalm 64. Back to Psalm 64. My goodness, is it already 20 after? Wow. Psalm 64, verse 7. But God shooteth them with an arrow. Suddenly shall they be wounded. So they shall make their own tongue to fall upon themselves. All that see them shall flee away. And all men shall fear and shall declare the work of God. For they shall wisely consider of his doing. We're going to wrap this up here. There's only two things in the Bible that the Bible says are wisely considered. It's plain in the verse that you should wisely consider the Lord's doing. Right? Look at the other one. Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21. There's only two of them. Proverbs 21 and verse 12. Proverbs 21 and verse 12, the righteous man wisely considereth the house of the wicked. Wisely consider God's doing, wisely consider the house of the wicked. You should be able to learn a lot from wisely considering those two things. Those are the only two things that are quote unquote wisely considered. All righty. Any questions or comments? Yes, sir, Brother Dave.